Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present, with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Dear guests and spectators on their TVs, I'd like to welcome you all to CONIFA 2018 World Cup Draw. Kroatya girişini gerçekleştirmek üzere CONIFA Başkanı Sayın Per Anders Blindy ve CONIFA Genel Sekreteri Sasha Dwerkopu sahneye almak istiyorum ben. I'd like to invite Mr. Per, the President of CONIFA and the General Secretary Sasha Dwerkopu to the stage in order to make their opening speech on the draws.
Hi. Welcome to another episode of Political Football, a podcast series from These Football Times. Football is a global phenomenon. People who follow it can fall into an obsessive mindset where victory or defeat for their national or club team can define their lives, attitudes or understanding of the world around them, both locally and globally. Over time, and in so many places around the world though, the game's ability to intoxicate and elicit unquestioned devotion to a cause has often been manipulated by states, parties, other political organisations, or indeed individuals seeking ways to persuade, influence, and increase power by using football as a political tool. This series looks at examples of such scenarios, considers their context, cause and effect, and how the game has been used by such political forces. It also questions whether at times football's kickback will provide a means to counter them. This is the political football, and today we'll look at the world and work of CONIFA. I'm Gary Thack, and I'm delighted my good friend Stu Horsfield is co-hosting the series with me. How are you doing, Stu?
Hey, Gary. You okay?
I'm good, thank you, matey. Yeah, it's a little bit cold the last few days over here, matey. So I've got sort of a bit of a kindred spirit with your good self back in the UK.
You're nothing like us. I don't know who you think you're fooling. We've still got rain. It's still barely light for any point in the day. I'm not having that. Not having it at all.
It's really nice, mate. We came back. Went to the local team play today. Played a boring 0-0 draw. So we had to stop and have a couple of beers outside in the bar, sitting outside in the evening sunshine. It was 19 degrees. So I suppose I'm just a world away.
Anyway, like. You're a world away from us.
So who's our guest today, buddy?
It's great. Old friend Justin Y, we spoke with on an edition of the Centre Circle a little while ago, which I hope people remember, when we discussed his outstanding debut book, One Football, No Nets, which, amongst others, told a lot of his experiences, but obviously one of them being an international football manager. He coaches and plays football, managed three teams in Latvia, one in Zimbabwe, volunteered in Sierra Leone. Played around 50 games in the Latvian National League in his spare time. Also works as a football journalist and in football development through football club boards, executive committees, is an advisor to clubs. Justin also co-founded Riga United FC in Latvia in 2007. A very world-renowned, shall we say, world traveller. Right up there with Michael Palin. He's visited 125 countries, lived in 8 countries, currently at the moment studying Russian, living in Russia. He's quite the guy.
Welcome, Justin. You know, just happy to say, you know, you're the guy that makes Stu and I feel inadequate.
Evening, gents. How you doing?
All right, mate. Looking forward to this. We've had some conversations with guys about various international footballing bodies that's been quite depressing. So we're looking for a real uplifting thing about the positive attitudes of CONIFA to world football.
Well, I was laughing at your weather with your temperatures because it's -8 here this morning. So I was thinking your 16 degrees, whatever you're on about, sounded a bit warm.
Well, thanks. I've got a T-shirt on sitting there. I've got a cold beer, so I suppose you could pretty much put the beer outside to make sure it's cold out there in Russia. What about in Russia are you, mate? St. Petersburg, is it in Russia?
I'm in St. Petersburg at the moment, yeah. Over here, got some meetings and studying a bit of Russian while I'm here for a few weeks. So it's a very nice city, nice place to be for a little while.
Grand. Okay, so just to kick us off, Justin, can you give us a little bit of a brief summary about CONIFA? And sort of any context you think are useful in regards to, you know, politics?
Yeah, sure. CONIFA is the Confederation of Independent Football Associations. And I think the easiest way to summarise it is probably all the teams that are not in FIFA. Now, you're talking about a global acting organisation, it's non-profit, and it represents international football teams from nations, de facto nations, if that's the right word, regions, minority peoples, and what we would call sports isolated territories of the world. It's an organisation that cleans up and represents the places that haven't got the FIFA representation, really and truly.
What's your role in CONIFA, for mate?
Yeah, so I have two roles really. One is I'm the African president of the organisation. I'm also a member of the executive committee, the global executive committee of CONIFA. And we have a monthly meeting on Skype, a Skype conference, where we discuss the most important issues that the organisation faces to try and, with a lot of voting, usually going on, a lot of discussions, a lot of voting.
Right. I mean, Africa president and member of the executive committee sounds, you know, a bit sort of pretty prestigious. You know, you're up there with Michel Platini. Well, no. A bad example.
Have another go.
A bad example. I'll retract that straight away. It's a very prestigious sounding role, matey.
It's a great honour for sure. I'm really, you know, very honoured and delighted to participate and to have what I hope is a positive influence. The organisation, we all work on a voluntary basis. We get some nice titles that come with it, and we get to get involved in some beautiful work and projects. The prestige sort of stops. Certainly no financial prestige, but it's a great honour to be involved in it.
Working voluntarily sounds very much like on Margaret Michel Platini. Stu.
This is great. I mean, the last sort of political football we did, we were looking at CONMEBOL, weren't we, Gary? Two things. One, I'm really, having listened to that, and obviously the chats that were involved around UEFA and FIFA within that podcast, and then this one, it's like they're miles apart, and I think, you know, like Gary said, it's almost like a feel good factor. It's everything that I want football to be, or it seems to be everything that I want football to be. But I think first off the bat, Gary, one of the, you know, when you think about governing bodies and bureaucracy and red tape and committees and all those things, but I suppose a monthly Skype call, I'm just wondering how you get through the bureaucratic business, if you like, on a monthly Skype call, or whether CONIFA doesn't necessarily get bogged down with such problems.
What happens is we have an agenda which is set in advance, and there's a few documents that ideally we get to read in advance of the meeting. And we're not really a top, if I describe this in the correct way, we're not really a top-down organisation. You know, everyone's on the same basis. Yes, we have a general secretary and a president, but really we're equals. And I think you've got to be anyway in a situation where, the people are all voluntary and giving their time to and passion to something. So there's no great formality with it. It's done in a professional manner, but you know, we meet. Not everyone can be there, of course, for every meeting. It's a Skype conference could be, I don't know, sort of 7 o'clock on a Friday in London, but obviously there's people in Australia perhaps, or there's people in South America, so not always people can attend, or they, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the afternoon for them when the meeting takes place. But yeah, we'll just run down a series of points to discuss, and a good meeting a meeting should sort of take an hour and a half to 2 hours, which is rare. There have been some meetings this year where it's sort of run for 4 hours. which is, it's not always the easiest time-wise for people. But, it's once a month, so hopefully, people can find that time. A lot of important decisions to be made, and some topics, you know, it's they need more than one meeting. You know, the discussions are put back for another month or even 2 months sometimes.
Yeah. I guess some of our listeners might know more about Conifer than others, but I guess if it's sort of bordering on their sort of consciousness, what might bring it back to the mind is that the World Cup of Football that was held in London, you know, fairly recently, and forms a big part of Justin's book, which, you know, if you haven't read it yet, still refer to the title earlier, buy it and read it, because it's probably one of the best football books I've ever read. So just to perhaps give us a bit of background about the World Cup of Football, Justin.
Well, thanks for the kind words about the book. The World Cup, the last one, was in London, as you mentioned. It was the end of May 2018. It ran for about 10 days. And we had teams from all over the world competing in that. The memory starts to go, I think it was 16 teams. And I was managing one of them, but you start to forget things, don't you? We played in London, non-league grounds such as Sutton and Haringey. It was a fantastic tournament with teams from all over the world. I was managing Matabeleland from Africa. I sort of had to let my Conifer Africa role go for a while I did that. We look to have World Cups every couple of years and to have Euros every couple of years. And if we had better finance or more sponsors, we'd be having more African Cups and Women's Cups and that kind of thing as well, which is still the target, and we still hope it's something that's going to happen quite soon.
It's can I jump in there and just ask you something really quick there? Justin, yeah. As well. Sorry, and just with your chat in there, obviously we mentioned before about, sort of coming on, and I'm sure, you know, this has come before, but obviously, again, for people who are maybe new to this podcast, but in terms of, you know, you mentioned in there that you're a voluntary organisation, and I suppose the relationship with other governing bodies, if you could just sort of, explain how Conifer is seen by UEFA or by, you know, sort of the FAs perhaps of other countries, where you're maybe sit as a principality, wherever your nation sit within a principality within a country, and what that relationship is like.
If FIFA want to say, or UEFA want to say, that they're not aware of us or something like that, I don't think that would be the case. Of course they know we exist. They do occasionally communicate with us. I think the first letters that Conifer received were applauded the work of the organisation, and I think subsequently there were some letters that sort of suggested that we stepped out of line on certain things, that there might be issues. But none of those. I don't know, veiled threats is the right word, but none of those sort of issues have gone anywhere. I don't think we're not competing with those organisations. What we're doing basically is giving football to, as I mentioned, that list of territories or peoples that aren't represented by FIFA at the moment. And, ideally, if members is in a position to then join, to leave Conifer and to join FIFA, we'd be very happy with that. But you can't be a member of both as such. You're a FIFA member, you're a FIFA member. It's a different situation for players. If Gibraltar is in FIFA, it's going to be in FIFA. That's as simple as that.
Yeah. I think one of the this is the sort of crux of the matter where Conifer is sort of hooks into our themes here, is that they have an ethos of being strictly political neutral. So, I guess the question is, well, twofold there is sort of why is that? How difficult is it to maintain that in a such a, you know, a weirdly complex and interchanging world?
Well, you've summed it up. It is a weird, complex, interchanging world, and there's complexities that I think most of us don't even understand that constantly the world is changing in weird and wonderful ways. We have members that, if we were going to start openly discussing politics, they are, historically... enemies, I suggest, you know. So what we say at CONIFA is that we go to the football stadiums, and that's where the situation is neutral. There's no discussion about politics in the stadiums. There should be no signage, no political signage in the stadiums. But if you want, if you want to sit down in a hotel bar and discuss things, that's up to you. It's, you know, that's the same as the world we live in with FIFA. You have members in FIFA. If you want to start talking about the likes of Kosovo and Serbia, they're members of FIFA, and very, very complicated situation there. You know,
yeah.
So I think it's vital for CONIFA that the football pitch is kept as a place where we're not there to discuss politics. We're there to represent our nations as such.
Good answer, mate. Stu?
Yeah, just on that, I'm really sorry. I should never have too much thinking time. Do you find Justin that the teams, the players, almost enjoy that neutrality, or almost the peace and quiet of the football pitch or the training environment, or that, you know, the major tournament? You know, you talk about the World Cup that was in London. Do you think it's because, you know, as Gary mentioned there, I mean, the world is incredibly political, and there's a lot of political turmoil all around the world at the moment, and yet, you know, you're providing this almost haven of tranquility, if you like, and I just wondered how that was received by the participating nations and territories.
I think that, you know, a lot of our members are shall we say politically marginalised or politically isolated, so they're aware of that every waking moment of their existence to some extent. So they're fighting against that, whatever you might think of their, anybody might think of their existence. So it's not important for them, I think, to go and to go into an international tournament and want to discuss that. What they want to do is to freely go somewhere and be themselves and play in that context. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think there's almost a relief that they go somewhere and they don't have to deal with it. You know, they're accepted in that moment when we played in London. All those teams, be it Tibet or the Tamil team, in that moment they were accepted. And there was no need. It's the old expression: let the football do the talking. There's no need. There's no need for any banners or any statements to be made. You're there and you play the football.
Because
I was thinking. No,
I was just going to say, you're right, the very existence, if you like, or day-to-day living is spent, or potentially, I don't know, I can't speak for them, obviously, but is spent almost in that eternal struggle either to be heard or to be recognised, and then all of a sudden they have this area where it's almost like a switch-off, it's almost a relaxing of that fight within them, if that makes sense. It can just be put to one side, and it was just interesting whether that fight can be put to one side, or like you say, maybe there's, I mean, obviously you don't allow it, you know, you don't allow CONIFA to be used for the political statement, as you've mentioned, but, you know, I'm just hoping that they don't sort of partly wish that they could use it as a platform, but they do actually see it as an oasis of a political free zone, if you like.
I think if that happens, then that ultimately that team, it would backfire on them probably, because it would be seen for what it is, and they'd probably end up being expelled or given some kind of sanctions. I mean, as a manager of a team that went into a tournament representing a particular group of people, my viewpoint, and I think the viewpoint of everyone involved, was that, you know, we took Matabililand to London and we showcased the culture of Matabililand. We made people aware of Matabililand, and the lads did the talking just on the pitch, but also off it. They really represented their homeland very, very well. And I think a lot of people became interested in Matabililand, and indeed in Zimbabwe, and got very good impressions from that. So I think if we'd gone there and we tried to politicise this. Our appearance, I think that ultimately would backfire. I think being positive and just going there and the guys being themselves is the best statement you can make, actually.
Brilliant. Yeah. Wonderful. Sorry, Gary. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, we've done so many podcasts together now. The subject that you almost asked exactly. I was going to say that, you know, this is almost like a haven for outside of the political sphere. So, so how did you get involved with Conifer, Justin? You know, what's your sort of what's your Conifer hook, I suppose, is what I'm asking.
My personal, so it's another one of those long stories. So. I was just at a point, I was looking at various things, thinking about various things to do, and my introduction to Conifer was suitably strange. There was a German guy called Jens, he came over. I was working with Rig United at the time, and one of his hobbies is he's collecting match-worn shirts from the lower league football clubs in Europe, and he came and he bought some Rig United shirts, and some old Rig United match-worn shirts, and anybody used to come down to Rig United, we used to you know, have a beer with them or sit in the stand and have a chat with them, and he just I started asking him what he did, and he told me about Conifer, and I'd never heard of it, to be honest. And he showed me pictures of the Abkhazia World Cup, and I said, wow, that's amazing. I've always been, you know, I'd love the idea of doing like an alternative World Cup, non-league clubs or something, you know. And he said, yes, he told me all about the organisation. We kept in contact, and then fast forward a few months, things just worked out that I was in a position where I could go and attend the AGM that was taking place. And he invited me along, and I attended it, and I was just really impressed with what I heard. The whole AGM was it just so open and honest and even amusing, you know. Just the people from all these different countries, the way they sat down and talked openly and passionately about football and football development. And at that point, I sat down with a couple of people from Conifer, such as Sasha, the general secretary, and I said, you know, is there any chance I can get involved? I'd love to get involved, and that's how it came about that I started working for the organisation, and actually, ultimately, that's how I ended up being a coach of an international team, because that was an ambition of mine, but I didn't initially realise that Conifer was the route to that, but you know, to some extent, through that German shirt collector coming to Rig United at the old sliding door situation, that all sort of fast forwarded to that point.
Yeah, I said earlier, you know, you've got this great gift of making us feel inadequate, mate. You know, there's another one, another example of that.
This is not meant to sound blasé in any way, because obviously what it is wonderful. But why do you think it? Because obviously it's a relatively recent initiative, and I just wondered if there was any reason why, or whether it was purely it just needed somebody to take it on, or whether it needed somebody to, you know, to fully invest their time and commitment. Or I just wondered what, you know, why it's not happened earlier, if that makes sense. And that's not a criticism in any way. Please don't think that.
No. But you mean Conifa's existence?
Yeah, as an existence. I mean, you know, football is, you know, the global game. It's a language that a lot of people understand, and it's certainly a way, you know, as Gary and I have done a lot of these, and it's a way that nations can find to express themselves for a whole variety of reasons through football. And I suppose it's just, you know, what prevented it from happening earlier, maybe, or, you know, was there a reason?
Well, I think you've always had non-FIFA teams that existed. You've had... Yeah. I think if you talk about the Channel Islands, you have Island Games, don't you? You have there's various teams. I think you sometimes get, you know, very unusual match programs where somebody's got a match program where Greenland have played against Alderney or something like that. You know, so these teams have existed to some extent. There's been kind of organisations that have come along and have come and gone over the years.
Okay.
And I think, Conifa was... we're talking only, 2013, I think it came into existence. And I think any organisation, you've got to have the right people involved, haven't you? You've got to have at least three or four people who can really drive an organisation, good people. And clearly that's happened with Conifa, with the likes of, as I said, of people like Sasha and Pear and Paul Watson and various people. You'll know Paul Watson, of course. And there's a lot of other people who I won't mention now, but, the organisation has just started to grow with teams that were a natural fit for the organisation. As we've gone along, you know, more and more teams have joined. I mean, we talk about Catalans, don't we? Catalan played many, many years ago in their own form. You have South American, excuse me, South America has indigenous tournaments. You have, there are linguistic minorities that play, island games, all these things, really. So I think it's a natural... It's a natural fit, I guess, in a way. It might have been interesting if one of the, you know, big global bodies had perhaps put money into something like this, and it could have existed, almost like a United Nations body at some point. But I suppose they would have peed too many people off, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, you know, sort of we've had sort of discussions about Conifa in the past, you know, with Grant Newport and other sort of podcasts that Stu and I have done. And I always, I don't know if it's almost too reductionist to sort of look upon Conifa as like an antidote to the organisation who have, you know, have pockmarked histories and that have been dappled in darkness and, you know, corruption and that sort of thing, where, you know, it almost feels like it's like an antidote to a disease infecting football.
Yeah, I don't think those organisations set out to be like that.
No.
I think this is a natural thing that happens. Power corrupts. Maybe in 50 years from now, if Conifa got lots of money and 500 members, maybe people wouldn't look at it so positively. I think that's something that unfortunately that creeps into things. Obviously, with Conifa, with having people who give their time, you know, on a voluntary basis to work. Clearly, there's no clear ulterior motives when you do something like that. You're talking about people with passion for the game, there are good people in FIFA and UEFA and CONMEBOL and all these organisations as well. I know some good people working in the likes of UEFA, and there's a lot of very good grassroots projects going on. You know, development's gone into communities and countries and really help push them on. I think it's mostly at the top end of these organisations where, you know, the corruption's on a ridiculous scale. It's very sad and frustrating to see, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good to hear you say that about, you know, the being good elements in away from FIFA, CONMEBOL, and you know these other organisations. And I guess it, those sort of things never get mentioned in the press. It's only the bad thing we hear about. So you know, there's a little bit of a, that's pretty positive. And you mentioned the contact with FIFA earlier. Do you think that FIFA see CONIFA as any kind of threat to their sort of world dominance of football?
No, I don't. I don't think so. Only if FIFA started coming apart at the seams, which is not going to happen. They have their issues, but that's not going to happen. I mean, we're not competing with FIFA. We're trying to provide football to teams that, for one reason or another, FIFA don't want to help. I think you know, if you look at the South Pacific and you take Tuvalu, you've got a very interesting situation where you've got a full United Nations member that should totally qualify for FIFA membership. And yet, for decades, they've just been pushed around. And they've got an annual budget, which is just a few thousand. Now, if they were to be accepted into FIFA, which they undoubtedly should be, they would have, I think, 2 million a year or something. And for some reason, FIFA just don't want that. So we bring them in. It's difficult for a team like Tuvalu, but they came to the World Cup. But ultimately, I hope, and all of us at CONIFA hope, that a team like Tuvalu will join FIFA. We can wave them goodbye and wish them well, and they get that money and they get that development, and they become a football team that's playing in a World Cup one day, hopefully. And we say, oh, yeah, remember when we beat them in the CONIFA World Cup.
Yes, Stu.
Yeah, it's funny. Listening to that, the last part. You know, you talked about Tuvalu as an example, and you know, I don't mean to use it as a glib example, like a feeder club, but you know, do you almost see that? You know, potentially, you know, almost raising the profile in a football way. Obviously, you know, we're away from the political element now, but in terms of football and their contribution or their potential contribution to FIFA. You know, do you almost see yourself as a kind of a stepping stone in being able to help, perhaps, you know, that sort of the transition into full FIFA membership should it arrive, or maybe improve their case or improve their chances? Like you say, you mentioned Tuvalu, actually improving their chances of becoming full FIFA members.
I think the whole question of nationality and nationhood is obviously a very strange and vague one. You even have that in the UK, I think, where, you know, a Manx can be playing football for England, but then he's in a British team, and then in another sport he might play and represent the Isle of Man. So you have that even within the United Kingdom. It's a very vague situation, and there are members that for sure I think have the possibility to one day join FIFA, and you only have to look at Gibraltar, Kosovo, Faroe Islands, I guess, within the rules of what is supposedly nations to look at it and think that, yeah, some of our members can use CONIFA as a stepping stone. Certainly Kiribati and Tuvalu from the South Pacific. There are members. I might suggest that Yorkshire is one, and Cornwall is another that might not necessarily ever play in FIFA, but never say never. You know, the world is United Kingdom break up into even, you know, ever smaller pieces, and who knows what will happen one day. But yeah, There are states that under any normal circumstances they would be granted membership, but because of their relationship to some big countries, that's not going to happen. We know the borders change. We know that countries, you look at South Sudan, has become two countries. We see countries like Macedonia, with a name change. So these things, yeah, you can't. I can't say you can't look at 60 members or whatever we have these days and say that, yeah, some of them we're pretty sure they'll never become FIFA members, but you know, 200 years from now, it's possible for anyone, I suggest. But no, in the foreseeable future, yeah, there might be five members we've got there, and it would be lovely if we could, you know, use us as a stepping stone for them to get full FIFA membership.
Actually, that sort of thing, you know, because a lot of organisations want to protect their sort of status by retaining membership, and you know, being open minded enough to see, you know, Conifer as perhaps a stepping stone. It's, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful difference between so many things that we hear about football organisations. I just want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about sponsorship and that sort of thing. You know, with World Cups, you have these megalithic organisations, you know, like Coca-Cola and, I don't know, MasterCard, and I can't remember what it, but there's so many things like sponsoring the World Cup. And obviously then there's an ability there to perhaps buy a presence at these organisations, sorry, these tournaments. And I remember that in the London World Cup Football, Paddy Power, a big sponsor of that, and you mentioned about getting more sponsorship potentially for Conifer. Is there a sort of danger, you think, that the political neutrality might be sort of endangered as Conifer grows and becomes more attractive to sponsors, do you think?
We talked at the start about complications, a complicated world and a politically complicated world. We none of us truly understand this. It's constantly evolving. I think when you look at sponsors, sponsors come with agendas, and or countries linked to sponsors come with agendas. So, you know, if somebody comes to us and say we have to take, I don't know, we have to take Tibet out of the tournament or they won't sponsor us, we're not going to do that. Even if it means, you know, losing a potentially very big sponsor. We know these things go on. We know these kinds of things go on in business. But there are certain people that won't touch us because of business interests. Again, on a macro level, I know with Matabeleland, it was very difficult for us to get certain sponsors because they were afraid that it would be, you know, looked upon negatively that they put their name to us at the tournament, rightly or wrongly, we never would have known, I guess. But so it's difficult bringing in sponsors with some of the names that we have as members. But it's a disappointing situation when it's difficult to bring sponsors in like that. But yeah. I think for Paddy Power, it was I believe that they had a very positive experience. I think it worked both ways. Very positive for all involved, and I expect there to be more sponsors coming in as. You know, people look at Conifer and see good tournaments and see a good, clean organisation and, you know, want to be associated with it.
Yeah, Stu?
Yeah, it's funny, again, I was just, you know, sort of listening to you speak and, you know, we've sort of mentioned FIFA and, you know, the big footballing organisation, you know, and then Gary's mentioned the big sponsorship companies, but I suppose I'm interested in other organisations. So if you know, think about things like maybe the Red Cross, Football Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières. You know, do any of those organisations look to engage with you and partner with you, or, you know, discuss? You know, I don't know. Are they any? You know, do they have any sort of interaction with you with regards to the work you do and the work they do and possible collaboration?
I'm not too aware of too many sort of the big NGOs really speaking to us too much. I think, again, it's slightly problematic if they're related to, you know, big global organisations. I think it can be a bit awkward. I think it's needs must, though. I think if we were in a situation where there was an obvious reason for us to be in connection with the Red Cross, why not? But there's organisations where we send football boots out to countries, you know, tiny little charities and stuff. We have we have that relationship with them. Yeah, we don't have too many formal relationships with charities, but perhaps that's just maybe we need somebody that's just in that role of speaking to NGOs and trying to build those relationships. I think we're still very early in the we're talking about an organisation that's only 6 years old and has pretty much got no money, so. Yeah, we're constantly sort of evolving, and I see no reason why some good NGOs can't get involved with us in the future.
Yeah, I mean, like Gary said, it seems to be incredibly well run. You're very, as you've said, politically neutral, transparency throughout. Everything that you do, it to me as an outsider, and while I admit it's probably incredibly naive, but you seem to be able to, you're engaged with areas in the world that potentially need more than just football, and Kanifa seems to be an organisation that would work well with others, especially with the way you go about your business.
Mm-hmm. Well, we the whole point of us is we're a service to our members rather than us sort of, being the big father figure.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, it's possible we could make a decision in the Global Executive Committee and take it to our members and they could almost tell us, no, we don't like this, can we change it? And
right.
We consider that, Yeah, we're just trying to facilitate things and improve things, and if it looks like we've made a mistake, we go back and change it. I don't, think that's the nature of the organisation. We're a modern organisation with people who want to improve things.
We mentioned earlier. Well, I'm not sure which one of us flagged him up. It's probably me because. Quick more of mine. They're about to people like Blatter and Platini and those sort of things. And you sort of flagged up that the lower ends of the organisations have a lot of good people working there. But sometimes the big wigs of the organisation cast a bigger shadow over them. And you mentioned the guy called Sasha, who I think is general secretary there. Obviously, yeah. It's really important to have a decent guy at the head of these organisations. So just a little bit of background about Sasha, if you can, and his sort of ideals and his perhaps mission statement for Kanifa.
I think, with Sasha, he's the main driver of the organisation because he's the general secretary. He's the go-to man. He's very well read. He's a young man with a lot of energy, and I think he's a very fair person with good morality, what I know of him. I think he's one of those people. He's one of a number of people, he's one of those people that helps drive on the organisation. I think in terms of mission statement, it's what we said earlier, really, isn't it? It's about giving football to underdeveloped people's locations.
I guess what I was referring to is the organisation, do you think, in good hands? It sounds like the answer to that is very much yes.
I believe so. And at the end of the day, we have what happens is that people like ourselves, we're voted into roles. And then after 2 years, when it comes to the AGM, we have the opportunity to stand again or to stand down or for other people to try to take a role on. So Sasha and Pear as president, they've been in those roles for some time and people are happy with them. Ultimately, if they weren't happy with them, they wouldn't maintain those roles, I don't think, even in a voluntary situation,
Sure.
Myself, I've had the official role for 2 years, and when it gets to the AGM in January in Jersey, I believe it's going to be, I have to decide, do I want to stand again, or does somebody else want to stand, or do I want to look at a different role? But ultimately, yeah, if people aren't the right people, then they can be replaced. And also, you know, within the organisation, when we have our executive, our monthly meetings, if we feel that somebody is letting the side down, then that will be discussed, and it will be discussed whether it's the right thing for that person to continue in those roles.
Sure. Yes,
Tim? Yeah, I've got another question for you, Justin, and this is more, sure. This is more, you know, you as a person, your own individual opinion, this is something that, that I go on about quite a bit, and you look at, and I'm not in any way linking this to Knieffer, this is, I'm just interested in you as the individual and your opinion on this. And you look at FIFA and you had Havelange for 24 years, I think, and Blatter for 20. You had two people, really, controlling world football for nearly the best part of 40, 45 years. Do you think that that becomes an issue? You know, do you think that when you get to that presidential level, that there needs to be a maximum term of service before it must go to a new face, a new name, a new person?
I think that exists in exists in everything, doesn't it? It exists in businesses, it exists in nation states, sports bodies, what have you.
Yeah, and politics as well, when you have, you know, dictatorships and FIFA felt like it had almost become a dictatorship with these two figureheads at, you know, the top for so long.
Yeah, it happens. I'm not sure that necessarily saying that somebody should have 4 years in office in a country or 8 years in office is exactly right, because if someone's doing a good job and if in the complicated world that we live in, and that works better, having that leader for 20 years, frankly, it's not necessarily the worst thing. I'm a great believer in the best persons for the job, and I don't care if, you know, what person's colour of skin is, or their sexual orientation, or how old they are, or whatever. So I think the best person should be doing the job, and continuity is an important thing. And if it's good continuity, then I think that person should probably continue. But I think in Conifer, there's the opportunity for the people to challenge and to take on roles if they wish to. And as I say, let's not forget that this is about this, even for the likes of Sasha, it's a voluntary role. And I can't imagine that Sasha in 10 or 20 years' time going to want to be doing it for free.
Yeah, like I say, it's not. It wasn't something, you know, specific to, you know, to Knieffer. It was more just it's something that interests me on a, like you say, on a global scale. And I suppose as somebody who is, you know, administrator at what would potentially be described as a global body, I was just interested in your opinion on it.
I see certain countries, and I might not necessarily like the leaders that have been in there for a lot of years, but I sometimes think that works better for that country than having constant change.
Right.
The stability and the positives that come with that are better than what might be deemed a bit more freedom, but more instability.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes. And every organisation is different, just like every marriage is different. And I think... yeah, we don't want dictators in organisations. And as long as we have the ability to remove people if they're the wrong people, and I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So next question is sort of like two questions basically. So firstly, what effect do you think Conifer has had on football? And secondly, what different effect would you like Conifer to have had on football, Justin?
Well, the effect it's had on football, I hope, is obviously in general a very positive one. I think by providing football to millions of people, basically, that then there aren't millions of people playing football in Conif, but we represent hundreds of millions of people actually globally. I think by offering that to people, and be it Abkhazia, for example, hosting a World Cup and the entire nation, most people will tell you that was the greatest day in their history. I think that's a very positive thing that we're providing to people. I think you know we love football, and I think football's a wonderful thing, and so many positives can come from it. And I think you can make friendships all over the world, and you become healthier from playing, hopefully. And generally speaking, you know, and I think as an organisation, yeah, we've broadened out football. We've taken it almost, how can I put it? You know, it's like the guys used to go out and spread religion around the world and do it for the right reasons. I think we've done that to some extent with football. We've taken it to places that you know don't have the same opportunities, you know. And I see someone like Paul, you know, Paul Watson going out to the South Pacific and wanting to, you know, develop football in places where, you know, there's very little football culture and almost no money and no facilities. And the likes of Paul want to go out there and, you know, improve people's lives through it. I think it's a fantastic thing. My response I get about Conifer is overwhelmingly a good one. People like Conifer. I think anybody who went to London loved it. They've discovered new places, new peoples out of it. And those peoples and places have had the opportunity to say hello to the rest of the world.
Great. Stu?
It's funny, I mean, listening to that, I suppose, you know, it's not so much a question, I suppose it's more of an affirmation that I'm after. But, you know, you mentioned there, you know, the analogy of missionaries, and I suppose, you know, do you see that as a vital part of Conifer's as work, if you like, as well, that taking football to areas where, you know, maybe there's not been the opportunity, or, you know, people haven't gone there to develop the game, if you like, or people have decided to ignore it or not access it or not invested. You know, do you see that almost missionary work? I don't want to call it missionary work, but I don't know how else to describe it. But do you see part of Conifer's mission?
Yeah, I mean, that was an expression that was coming to mind. I mean, we do it in a passive way. It's not.
I like the way you described it. It makes sense to me.
It tends to be, you know, people will contact us and say, you know, can we join Conifer? So we look at them as potential members, and we say, can they? And then we have a vote on it. But, you know, if they join, then we try to assist them as much as possible. Most of it is obviously not financially; it's just in pure advice, and we try to get them on board and get them involved playing with the teams, and hopefully come and play in one of our tournaments. We've got examples, haven't we, of teams like the team I manage in Matabeleland. If you want to talk about Africa, a team like Western Sahara that can go and play in a tournament, and it's very difficult for them. A lot of the people living in refugee camps and or Darfur, another team on the continent there, it's very problematic for them, but it allows them to maintain a sense of identity and to play, you know, playing the game they love. So I think, yeah, there's an element of that that missionary idea to it. But it's ultimately, yeah, it's football for everyone. Look, football should be for everyone, right?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if the big global organisation can't provide that itself, then we as a much, much smaller secondary organisation can give that to the remaining people, and that's, I think, it's a very good thing.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's difficult not to, and I'm not even going to try to not see conifers as a massively positive effect on football. You know, it's about bringing people together and enjoying football. You know, well, I mean, for God's sake, what else? What could be wrong with that? But yeah. I'm going to go back to the 2018 World Cup of Football, and forgive me, I can't remember the name of the region, but one of the players from one of the areas who. They might even have won it, forgive me.
Carp Italia.
Yeah, they went back to Ukraine and they had problems about from the Ukrainian government saying they were promoting a separatist cause and got banned.
Yes.
So for most people, you know, including myself here, it seemed like a pretty petty way for a government to look upon people who were just going out to enjoy football and bring honour to their country as well.
Well, I think also they're representing a minority group from within a country. I don't think, you know, at the end of the day, that means that anybody genuinely believes that Carp Italia is going to be its own breakaway state as such. I think it's up to each and every nation state's got their rights to how they deal with these things. But they also, the rest of the world looks at them, and if you're too heavy-handed. And I might suggest in that situation, I think they were. It doesn't reflect very well on the Ukrainian state, regardless of the rights and wrongs of people from Carp Italia identifying with a different ethnic geographical area. But I think you can shoot yourself in the foot. You know, with it, and I think I have to keep making parallels with the team, you know, team I coach. But you know, we took Matabele land from Zimbabwe. It's a region of Zimbabwe. We took them to London. Now, had the team returned to Zimbabwe and been arrested, I think that would have looked very, very bad on the Zimbabwean government. And that didn't happen. We were allowed to travel. We got the blessing of the Zimbabwean state in the end, President Mnangagwa, and we travelled and we represented Matabele and we represented Zimbabwe, and I think by being allowed to return not to be sanctioned in some way was one of those few positives that have come out of Zimbabwe in the last few years, actually. In the case, I think that was too heavy-handed, and I think they might have shot themselves in the foot a little bit with that, the Ukrainian government.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Matabele, and I don't think anybody would sort of say that what you and those guys did in London did anything other than promote the cause of Zimbabwe as well as Matabele land. So, you know, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I agree entirely that the reaction of some governments. He's actually shooting themselves in the foot, really, rather than celebrating the success or the efforts of these guys who are from just different parts of that country.
Yeah. It's it's not like I'm not. We're all sensitive to the threat that some governments might see of separatism, and you only have to look at Spain and the Catalonia thing, and you know the guys, the men and women are now imprisoned, and you can have your own opinions on that. Again, is it right or wrong that there should be a separate Catalonia? But I think when you start to imprison people, it sometimes could be seen as, you know, in that case, as the Spanish government shooting themselves in the foot and perhaps pushing something faster in that direction of separatism rather than the opposite.
But I guess it might be a slightly different situation with regard to somebody who's actually exposing separatism. But, you know, over in Spain, there's been a it's not a Catalan team, it's a Catalonia representative team and players who have played. It's very much like, you know, I know because the kind of don't insist on ethnic qualifications, it's who is perceived to have a relationship with that region. And, you know, players like Messi, who is Argentinian, has played for the Catalan representative team. Iniesta, who's from Extremadura, from La Mancha. He's played for the Catalan representative team because they feel a kinship with that region. And that doesn't mean that team is espousing any particular separatist situation. Very similar to the Basque team who play occasionally in the north of Spain. They may have a separatist belief, but the football team that plays there is just a regional team. And just the same, I guess, as, Liverpool can play for Liverpool and not want separatism from England.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of myself. You play at county level when you're a young lad. You play football. Let's say you play for Leicestershire. You're not playing for Leicestershire necessarily because you want Leicestershire to secede from the rest of the country, are you? I was very honoured to play for Latvia for a Latvian national journalist team. I played actually against Russia and I had a Latvian shirt on and played against some, very good ex-professionals from that are now journalists in Russia. But I had an affinity to Latvia. I'd spend a lot of time there and, I wasn't Latvian and I was very, very honoured that they allowed me to, as an Englishman, to go and play for them. And I think a lot of that was down to the fact that I'd spent several years there and they saw me as, having an affinity with the country. I totally agree on that.
Yeah. Grand stuff.
I could listen to you all day. I've got a million and one questions that I could ask you about a whole host of stuff, but I appreciate it. It's late where you are. One thing that I want to ask you that, and as we've been going through this discussion, and even when we're sort of reading your book, you seem to wear a lot or have worn an awful lot of hats. Coach, player, author, administrator, president. And all these different things, and Gary had mentioned about how inadequate it can make some of us feel. But just first and foremost, what do you identify yourself as first and foremost? Are you a football coach first and foremost? Are you a president of a football organisation? Are you an administrator? I'm just interested in what you see yourself, what you still identify as, despite all of these roles that you've played.
Well, you it's very kind what you said. You haven't seen me face down in the gutter on many occasions.
I can't believe that you're not face down more often. Don't worry about that.
Well, funnily enough, I was face down a couple of days ago, but I'll leave that
there. Brilliant.
I like to I just like to kind of live life a little bit intuitively and do the things I like to do, really. And life works out differently for everyone. I'm not married. I haven't got kids. That could have happened. It didn't. It hasn't happened. I went travelling in my mid-20s and I opened up a few sort of things in my head to opportunities out there and changed my worldview. I think if you've lived abroad a couple of times, it changes your sense of what's achievable. I've had a lot of lows, a lot of failures, but I like doing different things. Football was a great passion for me. I loved playing. I love playing more than I like watching or coaching. I played a game in St. Petersburg a couple of weeks ago for a new team. I can't remember the last time I was so nervous, actually. But, I absolutely loved it. I only played 20 minutes. So I have an overwhelming passion for football. But I don't think of myself as one thing. Maybe I'm not particularly good at any of these things. That could be a factor. I'm not a brilliant footballer. I'm not a brilliant coach. Not a brilliant administrator, maybe that's perhaps the reason. But I enjoy these things, and it's a case of what comes along next. I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do next. I'm spending some time in Russia and I'm enjoying it, and I'm looking at options. I'm also looking at some coaching opportunities for next year on a completely other side of the world. But it really depends on what comes my way, really. But most important thing for me is just being happy and just doing things that are interesting and living life, really.
I find you absolutely fascinating. Fascinating.
I mean, I was talking to Stu a while ago about when you said you wanted to come on and talk about Conica. You know, it's going to be not only a fantastic conversation, but also uplifting as well. And, you know, we've had so many sort of conversations with guys who have, not being too depressing, but being absolutely honest about organisations and countries where politics and football have sort of mixed to in a depressing degree. And we thought it was going to be a great one. And you absolutely knocked out the park, Jack, just as I was sort of always sure you would do. And if anybody wants to know a little bit more about this guy who is an example to anybody who wants to do things and looks to it, can I do this? Well, I'm going to have a cup of tea instead. Follow Justin on Twitter because he's amazing. But I want to close this, as we always do, with the same question. We've had a lot of great answers to this question. Most of them have been sort of quite depressing, not the right word, but realistic, shall we say, and sort of fairly downbeat. So I'm hoping, because of Conifer and your good self and your attitude to the world, Justin, that are you going to send me away with a smile on my face? So here's a question, mate. No pressure.
It's a big build-up.
So can football exist in a political vacuum, or does the passion engendered by the game too easily lend itself to being a political tool? In short, is the political football inevitable?
Politics is inevitable in everything. Yeah, you have politics in relationships, man and a woman, man and a man, woman and a woman. There's always politics, so I don't think you can entirely escape that. Politics is part of life, isn't it? We keep... The world existence is a very complicated thing, so I don't think it can exist in a pure vacuum. But I think if you look at Conifa, what you need to do is you need to manage it in such a way that the politics is in the right place and time. Yeah. So, in the sense of Conifa, we say, yeah, when you're out on the pitch or when you're in the stands of the stadium, we don't want any politics. But if you want to go down the pub and you want to get drunk and you want to have a fight with the other guy, that's up to you. But, I'm giving you a very simplistic answer, to be honest. But I don't think you can ever totally get away from it, but I think you can manage it. I think it gets harder when you're in a bigger organisation with tentacles stretching out into all different kinds of other interests, we sort of talked about sponsors. Once you get to be a huge organization with interests all over the world and corporate multinational companies involved, it's impossible not to have, I think it's impossible not to have some politics involved. But with Conifa, I just hope the organisation can continue to grow and grow in a mostly beautiful way. And I hope that after a while we can have some money and pay some salaries to people, and we can start to spend some money developing in some of our members a little bit more, and then we can keep the politics to people. People doing a talking on a football pitch.
That'll do for me, buddy. That'll do for me. That'll do for me. Let football do the talking. That'll do for me. Stu, any final thoughts?
Just like I say, it's such a... There are always such life-affirming conversations with Justin. Anything to do with Conifa, and I think, like you just said there, the closing comment of just let football do the talking. I feel like it should just be a mantra that's just played out across the globe. you know, FIFA has its own mission statement and what have you. And you just let football do the talking. That's it.
Yeah, brilliant, yeah. So I want to say a massive thanks to Justin for coming on and talking to us about Conifer. As I said earlier, you know, I thought it could be a great conversation, and, you know, with Justin, you don't go wrong. You can't go wrong because he's a wonderful conversationalist and happy to talk about his experiences with Conifer. And, you know, I'm not going to apologise for this. If you want to buy a great book about football, buy Justin's book. Why Football Now? That's a great story. It's full of people. It's full of football. It's a great story as well. So massive thanks, Justin. Thanks for coming on the podcast with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on again. It's a genuinely a real honour.
Thank you.
And it's always great to be talking to you two guys.
Much appreciated, mate. Thank you very much. So that was the Political Football. We're talking about Conifer with Justin Wally. And so catch us next time on the Political Football when we'll be looking at something, another subject where football and politics are entwined. Thank you. Bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.